Welcome to Historical Homicide. I'm Christina Bentley, your host through the history of homicide in New York's Southern Tier. I've always been fascinated by the strange and unsettling, from a childhood filled with episodes of The Twilight Zone, monster hunting, Tim Burton films, and a deep-seated need for justice, to a marriage into a legacy law enforcement family. The odd and macabre have been and continue to be a vestige of my daily life. The purpose of this podcast is to view the incidents that have happened in our small corner of the world with a lens of humanity. We question what we would do if placed in the same situation. Would we follow our inner moral compass? Would our quick decisions save the day or wreak havoc on those around us? How much control do we really have? As we ponder these questions, let's delve into our first incident. Today's episode is entitled Coin Flip. Jamestown, New York, 1915. World War I is raging. T.S. Eliot's The Love Song of J. Edgar Prufrock has just been published for the first time in a poetry magazine. And women who just started showing their calves in mid-length dresses are running to the theaters to see the newest Charlie Chaplin film. Times are changing, city streets are bustling, everyday rhythms of life look a bit different than yesteryear. Jamestown is a busy metropolis, filled with luxurious hotels and entertainment. The city is a local epicenter for vaudeville theater. With such crowding, it's nearly impossible for law enforcement to patrol the streets with cars. Instead, officers mainly take foot beats, walking around the city to ensure order. No modern technology. A patrolman's street knowledge is vital. Getting dispatched to calls is a completely different process as well. Officers have phone boxes around the city and call into headquarters at regular check-ins. This is how they receive news of any emergencies that they need to attend. In case there isn't a call box nearby, they carry loose change and use payphones. Let's go to the afternoon of June 18, 1915, where our story begins. One of Jamestown's finest, George Kendall, is a fresh-faced, newly married 24-year-old who has joined the force a little more than a year ago. 1 year, 1 month, and 1 day prior, to be exact. His badge number? 13. George is on his beat. By all accounts, a normal shift. He's talking to a friend outside the Majestic Theater when he hears gunshots from the apartments above the theater. Let's pause. This story is mainly about George, but before we delve too deep, let's get to know the other players. But first, a word from our sponsors. Would you kill for a beautiful face? The good news is, you don't have to. Visit the Aesthetic House on Fairmount Avenue in Jamestown. They offer a wide range of medical spa luxuries, from Botox to Diamond Glow facials, facial fillers, laser hair removal, and so much more. Visit the Aesthetic House and tell them Christina from Historical Homicide sent you. You'll be glad you did. As I previously mentioned, Jamestown is home to beautiful hotels and vaudeville theaters. The man who owns many of these buildings is the wealthy entrepreneur Hudson Shaver. What a classy name, Hudson. He sounds like a movie star. He and his wife Orlinda have two children, Pearl and Fred. By all accounts, they're a nice, normal family. Hudson believes in hard work and perseverance. He has built a good life for himself and his family, and wants his son to do the same. Whether Fred is interested in the hotel business or not is unknown. What we do know is that he pursues a career as a locomotive engineer on steam engine trains. Quite different from his father, this work is a dirty job with rough and tumble crews. During this time, Fred begins to drink. A lot. When he is on breaks from work, he simply rides the train back to his hometown and spends time with family. Hudson's wife and Fred's mother, Orlinda, becomes ill and passes away in 1913. The close-knit family is torn apart in her passing. Fred continues to drink heavily while his father sets out to find company to aid his loneliness. Hudson finds another woman to marry, a vaudeville performer named Ruth Campbell, a woman with a good reputation and sound character. When she looks at Hudson, she probably sees kindness, stability, and security. But happiness soon turns to outrage when Fred discovers that the woman his father intends to marry, Ruth, is 27 years old. Only 27 years old. 40 years younger than his father. Fred himself is 41. He's already lost his mother. Is he going to lose his inheritance as well? Hudson and Ruth marry and decide to take their honeymoon in Cambridge Springs, Pennsylvania. Hudson knows the best hotels around, and I'd like to think that they stayed at the beautiful Riverside Inn. But after receiving phone calls about Fred's erratic behavior, one incident involving a firearm, he and Ruth cut their honeymoon short and hurry back to Jamestown. Their apartment is located in the Shaver Building and is situated on the second floor, directly above the Majestic Theater. Unpause. Let's get back to George, our young police officer. He's talking to a friend outside the theater and hears gunshots. Immediately, he runs into the Shaver Building. He's running in with no bodily protection, as Kevlar vests were implemented until the 1980s. He did not hesitate. As he's running up the stairs, he encounters an extremely intoxicated Fred Shaver. Boom! Before George even has time to think, Fred shoots him in the chest. As he collapses, he catches a glimpse of the apartment. The door is cracked open, and he sees Hudson Shaver in a pool of his own blood, dead on the floor. Panic. What is this madman doing? Two officers who saw George run in and heard the shots also run into the building. They grab George, drag him out, and get him to the hospital. Now, Fred, who's casually drinking out of a whiskey bottle, barricades himself in the apartment and proceeds to stand in the window for all to see. With all the commotion, a crowd is forming outside the theater below. It appears that the show is not in the theater today, but rather outside. Fred, in a slurred, drunken stupor, starts threatening the crowd from the window. Officers below are shouting, "Fred, it's over! Give it up, Fred!" They're pleading with him to come down safely. He scoffs at them and arrogantly starts writing little notes and throwing them at people in the crowd. He mentions that he has many weapons and he's not afraid to use them as he fires rounds into the crowd. But the building is right next to a trolley, and Fred decides that that will be his method of escape. He even writes that in a little note and throws it down. The police are trying to end this peacefully. They're trying everything, but the danger is escalating. At this point, Captain Reeder, who has been monitoring the situation, is done. He's had enough and orders four patrolmen to run to the armory and grab five long guns. Little fun fact here. One of the patrolmen is William Bentley. That's my husband's great-grandfather. Anyway, they return and set themselves up on the second floor of the Hotel Frederick, directly across the street from where Fred Shaver is standing in the window. At Captain Reeder's command, all five of them fire and take Fred out. Fred stumbles back into the apartment and out of sight. Police rush across the street and break down the barricaded door to discover that their aim was true. Half of Fred's head has been shot off. Meanwhile, George succumbs to his injuries and dies 1 hour and 30 minutes after Fred had shot him. Four deaths, three at the hands of one, and one at the hands of five. There are many oddities in this story. The appearance of many ones and threes, badge 13, George's time with Jamestown Police Department, 1 year, 1 month, 1 day. He died about an hour and 30 minutes after being shot. There's even a photo that was taken of him 1 hour before he was shot. Three deaths at the hands of one, Hudson, Ruth, and George, all killed by Fred. It gets even stranger. Some years later, there was a house fire in Jamestown. The house was completely destroyed, leveled to ash. As the fire and police agencies were on the scene, someone accidentally kicked something metal with their foot. Inexplicably, George's badge, badge 13, was gently resting on top of the rubble. To this day, no one knows how it got there. For years, a rumor was perpetuated that George tossed a coin with a fellow officer and ran into the Shaver building as a result of losing the coin flip and then losing his life. This urban legend has since been disproven, but it does make us wonder about the concepts of free will and fate. Did George's actions save the day, even if they didn't save him? What would we have done if placed in the same situation? How much control do we really have? It's the loose and unclear connections between the concepts of free will, control, and fate that leave us in a coin flip. That concludes today's episode of Historical Homicide. All of the events took place in what we now call Brooklyn Square. Check out photos and more location info about today's show on Instagram at Historical Homicide. A special thanks to Art Osterdahl, a retired detective from Jamestown Police Department, and he's currently one of the department historians, who provided me with valuable sources and information about this case. Thank you for listening. Join me next time for more murderous tales of the Southern Tier. Next time on Historical Homicide, what would you do out of desperation? Steal? Or even kill? Join us for the next episode on Tuesday, April 5th.